The House Speaker wants Phil Hinkle to quit. Why the scandal-plagued lawmaker hangs on. A class action lawsuit against the state fair, school takeovers, and a visit by the RNC chairman. That, plus Danica's future and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending August 26, 2011.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, Indiana House Speaker Brian Bosma made a public call for the resignation of fellow Republican Phil Hinkle. Hinkle admits to meeting a young man on Craigslist and taking him to a downtown hotel. Speaker Bosma also removed Hinkle from two committee chairmanships. Hinkle, meantime, says he intends to finish his term but has no plans to run for re-election in 2012. Hinkle says he is seeking professional help for, quote, what turned me down a road of self-destruction. I talked to him on the phone and he said, I did go over the edge. In a statement issued by his attorney, he says, quote, at no time did I try to detain the young man, nor did I ever expose myself to him, and at no time was there an offer of money for silence. That doesn't change the speaker's view.
I can tell you that the leadership team in the House is, there's no dissension on this. Everyone has a lot of compassion for Phil and his family. These are horrible circumstances to be going through, but there's no doubt that the right thing for him to do is to step away from public life at this point.
Is Phil Hinkle misguided? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney. Republican Mike McDaniel. John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Mike McDaniel, is Phil Hinkle an embarrassment to the Republicans at this point?
I don't think people see this as Republican-Democrat. I think they see this as a gentleman who's in a self-destruct mode and now seems to be in denial. I think what Brian Bosma did this week in calling for his resignation was the right thing. I think it's the right thing for Phil. I think it's the right thing for his family and certainly the right thing for his constituency, because I just don't see how he could be effective as a legislator trying to represent that district in the next session of the legislature. And when Brian said he ought to spend that time he would have spent in the State House repairing his relationship with his family and getting the help he needs to get, I think it's the right answer.
He's separately elected. There's nothing more that the speaker or anybody else can do.
That's right, and he said he intends to stay, so he's going to stay. And, you know, I mean, as reprehensible as his conduct may be, it doesn't directly reflect on his ability to do the job he was elected to do. It isn't the situation that Carl Brizzi had or even that Charlie White has. It's a completely different situation. Now, I grant you that it's, you know, it's salacious. Everybody wants to talk about the details of it, but it doesn't have a direct bearing on that, and he's elected. He's entitled to stay.
There hasn't been much of a public outcry at this point. Do you expect that that will change?
You know, it's hard to tell. Part of the thing is that after the story broke, then there was the tragedy at the state fair and, you know, some other things that have occurred in the meantime. The public has kind of lost sight of this particular story. But I think, you know, as Organization Day shows up and his first trip back to the State House might generate some interest. But unless, you know, unless people in his district say, look, we don't want you as our representative, I really don't think this is going to raise a lot of fervor among people for really the reason Mike said. This is seen as an isolated situation. It's not Republican. It's not Democrat. A lot of other things to worry about. If this is what he wants to do, then, you know, unless his own constituents say something about it, then he'll be there.
I think that's a good point. To the extent that his constituents or the public really, that this has resonated with them at all, because he'll benefit, Phil Hinkle will benefit from the fact that the public at this point has a pretty short attention span and a pretty short memory. And if he's weathered the storm to this point, with the loss of the committee chairmanships and so forth. I think John's exactly right. This basically...
You think he's going to survive?
Well, no, wait. This goes off the radar screen, I think, until, as John says, probably November with Organization Day, where we'll see a flurry of activity, until the resumption of the session in January, where we'll see a flurry of activity. At that point, if he can get through those hurdles, as I mentioned last week, it depends on the issue that's before the General Assembly. If it's local government issue, if it's some sort of education funding issue.
Oh, he's not going to have any credibility on any issue, is he?
Well, no, I think that the difficult thing, though, where it erupts again into the public's consciousness is when there's some sort of perceived morals issue. And those are the issues that would dog him. The Nick Lindon's,
even if it erupts into the public consciousness, there is no recall provision under Indiana law.
Well, you're right.
Law.
I mean,
he can do what he wants to do, and he obviously wants to stay.
I think there's one other thing that could happen here. He could be unwelcome at Republican caucus meetings. Is that a possibility?
I have no idea. I mean, I think that Brian speaks for his caucus when he asked Phil to do what he asked him to do. I know Brian consulted with a lot of members of his caucus before making those public statements, so I don't know how welcome he'll be, but the problem is there aren't any elections between now and the time of the end of his term, so I'm not sure how the public basically says to him that we don't want you around anymore. And if you get 200 letters, and if you're in denial, you can say, well, I didn't get 6,000 letters. Well, I got 200 letters. And then you move on. So he can play this in his own mind any way he wants to play it. But the fact of the matter is, it's going to be very hard for him to be effective in doing his job.
And we've seen several members of Congress who have maybe not been in the exact same circumstance, but similar circumstances, who've been unable to continue.
Sure, but I mean, if the last remaining leverage here is that he'll be ostracized by his own party and barred from committee functions, I mean, from caucus functions, well, that's not much of a punishment. There are people who probably would volunteer for that.
Yeah.
I mean, and he's already, he doesn't need them.
Well, he lost not only committee chairmanships, he also lost a committee assignment.
But he doesn't need them.
Be left out of everything except floor votes.
That's exactly right. He's left himself high and dry with all of this. The big difference, Jim, between those situations with Congress and this is that there was a very large outcry, a consistent, loud, persistent outcry. A lot of people look at this, I think everybody looks at this and says, this is horrible, but nobody is saying, he said he's not going to run for election again. He's trying to take care of his business, and people are like, well,
that's,
okay.
That's the key. John hit on the key. The fact that he's not running again,
he ran for office to stand as an example and a leader, and he needs to set an example now, right?
But he also has friends in the legislature, even in his caucus, who are going to feel a certain amount of sympathy for him. And I think the caucus has to be careful because, by ostracizing him too much, they're also disenfranchising the voters in that district, whether that's the way they want it or not. That's
right.
The effect of that, and they really don't have the right to do that.
All right, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, how would you describe Phil Hinkle's behavior? Your choices are A, sad, B, disappointing, C, hypocritical, or D, all of the above. Last week's question was, will the investigations get to the bottom of the state fair tragedy? 62% said yes, 21% said no, 17% said more public pressure is necessary. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Lawyers from the Indianapolis law firm of Cohen and Malad are seeking to file a class action lawsuit over the stage collapse at the state fair. They say all 12,000 people who were at the concert the night of the collapse should be part of the suit. They say not everyone's injuries are physical. Angela Fisher and her boyfriend were right in front of the stage when the rigging came crashing down.
I keep replaying the images. It's like a movie in my head that doesn't stop.
At its most basic level, the case is ideally suited as a class action because all of the people who were harmed by the same set of problems.
And that's attorney Richard Shevitz. Ann Delaney, will that lawsuit succeed?
Well, there are a couple of problems with it. Indiana has what's called a modified impact rule, and you either have to be physically touched by an event like that or watch somebody close to you injured or hurt or killed. So for the rest of the people that don't have that in the stands, there would not ordinarily be any recovery, which points out, I think, a problem with Indiana law. You know, there are categories. There are obviously the people that died, the people that were injured, and then the people close enough to have really significant psychological effects from watching that horrific incident. But Indiana law doesn't provide for any recompense. So that, you know, that would make new law. And in addition to that, Indiana has the problem that there's a $5 million cap on liability for everybody injured in that, which means that the legislature needs to get back in there and fix that, because there are a lot of people that are going to have serious injuries from this that are going to have no recompense.
There are also suggestions now that these lawyers are fishing for clients. Is that fair?
Well, I've heard that. I mean, clearly, you know, there are people that are suggesting that. But, you know, lawsuits are going to happen anytime you have a tragedy like this, and we just have to wait till it works its way through the courts. The law is the law as it stands now. There's going to be plenty of outcry come the next legislative session to change a lot of laws regarding what happened or didn't happen at the Indiana State Fair. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with that as we move forward.
I'd just like to point out one thing on this, that they're taking that case for free. This is part of it's happened in several other states where the impact rule has been as harsh as it is here, and they're trying to overturn it by judicial precedent, and I give them credit for doing that.
Do you expect the legislature will act before lawsuits are settled, or do you think there will be a mood to wait?
Well, I think Mike's right. This sets the stage for a whole flurry of activity related to inspections, related to perhaps tort reform. And it really will be a fascinating scenario, because you have, it's not the kind of tort reform debate that you expect to have this day and age in legislatures across the country, where, if anything, the more common argument is, hey, let's put tighter caps on payouts and settlements and judgments. Here, I think you're going to have people who, in fact, have been supportive of quote-unquote tort reform in another context, being very sympathetic to the plaintiffs who, for reasons Anne outlined, are something of a disadvantage here in terms of getting compensation for their losses.
But worth pointing out, you can't pass a retroactive law.
Right.
So whoever was at the state fair is going to have to settle for whatever's available under Indiana.
I'm not sure that you can't pass a retroactive law where you've created a benefit after the fact. You can't take it away. I'm not sure that you can't pass a retroactive law to fund this hire.
Well, it may be something that's outside of the law. It might be a special exception written into the law for the case that already occurred. Whatever the case is.
They could have cases arising after a certain period of time. They can do it pretty much any way they want.
It would be artful, because typically that's not the case. You know, if you change the law, it's from that point forward. So, you know, they will look at this, and that's really why we have to have, you know, a good investigation for this, and something that's done relatively quickly so we can move forward with
information. And this is just the tip of the iceberg in terms of the litigation, I think, that will be filed. There's 270 days, I believe, that plaintiffs have to notify the state of their intention to file a tort claim. So I don't have a calendar in front of me. I don't know what 270, but sometime late winter, early spring, I think we will see yet another flurry of
May.
That's 9 months.
A flurry of activity as that deadline approaches. This is the half dozen or so suits we've seen thus far. It's just
the beginning.
Just the beginning.
State School Superintendent Tony Bennett made a recommendation for a state takeover of 5 public schools this week. There are 3 Indianapolis high schools, Arlington, Manual, and Howe on the list, Emma Donnan Middle School here, and Gary Roosevelt High School. 2 other Indianapolis high schools, Broad Ripple and Washington, face limited state intervention.
We can't blame the kids. We can't even blame the kids' parents as much as some folks want to. I think we have to look at ourselves. We have to look at ourselves as policymakers who said it's okay to have a state law that takes 6 years of poor performance.
We've probably allowed the erosion to occur for far too long before we took action. So that part saddens me.
John Katzenberger, did you expect Bennett to be that aggressive to 5 takeovers?
Yeah, I don't think there's any surprise in the list. In fact, there might have been some surprise that 2 high schools were taken off and had more limited circumstance with that. But what was kind of surprising to me was the aggressive way he went after not just the schools and the educational system, but really taking the legislature to task for saying, you know, you have a law that requires, you know, 6 years of essentially failure before something can be done to intervene. And so I think that, you know, his aggression here has only been ratcheted up, and he's really placed himself out there. Now these schools must improve, or the attention will turn to Superintendent Bennett, and the questions will be asked of him.
And he's not done yet. He signaled that this week in announcing this that he would be going back to the legislature next year to see if he could in fact get a mechanism that would basically prevent the school district, in either Gary, I suppose, in one case, or Indianapolis Public Schools in the others, from regaining control of these schools at the end of the prescribed period, unless they can demonstrate that they have the capability to maintain whatever course correction is made. Now, I don't know how you, I mean, that's,
he's set a pretty high bar here. What his staff is saying is they're not trying to get incremental change here. They want these kids to be getting a first-class education at the end of what is a five-year takeover period.
But if you think it's complicated, it seems to me that the debate that whether you have accomplished that and whether a district is capable of taking it back into its fold, that's no less complicated than what we've seen with trying to go through this 6 or 10 year or 11 year process since the 1999 legislation of figuring out who should be on probation in the first place.
So he's saying what we need here is cooperation between the state and the takeover operators and the school district. And before the day was out, Eugene White and the Indianapolis Public School Board threatened to sue. So the prospects here for this working smoothly are not good.
Well, it's not good, and that's disappointing. Of course, you know, in that same meeting, we had a 4-3 vote in that school board whether or not to extend his contract. So there's some dissension in that school board about Gene White, and one of the members even came out and said we need new leadership there. So, you know, there are problems inside that district. There's no question about that. But this law was passed when Frank O'Bannon was governor. This was 1999. And the way the law was written, and I'm sure was a compromise at the time, to make it 6 years before the state could take over, because that would placate a lot of the people in the teachers' unions and others to allow that long to go on before you make a change. So this was long overdue. And I applaud Tony Bennett for having the courage to say, yes, I'm not going to do this. We're going to do it, and we're going to do it well. And if he doesn't do it, then so be it. But he's putting himself out there, and he's willing to do it.
He's putting himself out there.
He's willing to do it, and if there's any change at all, that's better than what we've got now in those places.
Well, he's willing, and he says this isn't political, but at the same time, he says that his accountability comes at the ballot box.
It isn't political, but one of the two firms that he hired is the George Bush lookalike firm. All of the George Bush groupies belong to that, and it's a for-profit entity. My criticism when they started this was they needed to take a limited number of schools. They had to have clearly defined objectives for, quote, turning around. We don't have those. They want a first-class education. It's not defined. What progress is,
they say that
is
definition,
not defined.
They say that definition is coming in the transition year.
Oh, great. So we're starting on this, and we don't know what we're going to be measured against. And I would point out that one of the two entities that they're using for this by the National Education Policy Center said in 2009 only 37% of the schools that this Charter USA took over even met adequate yearly standards. Okay? Even met adequate yearly standards.
But that would be an improvement. But that would be an improvement from this.
Make any progress now?
I see. Adequate yearly standards and a great education are the same thing.
We're
supposed to have a great education.
This show today has taken on a theme. Every topic we've talked about could offer the same assessment. It's a sad situation. Everything we've said thus far, and this as the only member of the panel here who was actually an IPS product from kindergarten through eighth grade, and a brother who graduated from Arlington, and a brother who graduated from Broadway. Hey, my brothers did all right. No, I'm the only black sheet. It's sad. We can say that about every topic we've discussed today. It's another sad
comment. We also said nobody should profit off this, and these are for-profit entities, and that's another concern.
But who are you going to get to run the school district?
Well, there are other entities out there that do it, and one of them, by the way, has never done a high school before. okay? And we're bringing them in because they think, what?
Ed Power, which is
not a great question, is why do we wait until high school when you're talking about students who've already been in the system for 13 years?
But you at least play to their expertise. If they're supposed to be so terrific, you put them in the feeder school. You don't put them in the high school.
For John's benefit, let's change the subject. GOP presidential candidate Mitt Romney committed to a September Indiana campaign stop this week, and the RNC chairman came to Indianapolis.
Reince Priebus believes the Indiana primary next May could help determine the GOP presidential nomination. The national GOP chairman also thinks Indiana will matter in November of 2012, so he has this priority.
Get the message out that we care about Indiana and that we want Indiana to go red as it's done many times in the past in 2012.
Josh Wanis, on that visit, Priebus suggested that Mitch Daniels would make a good running mate. Should we start that speculation all over again?
I think he said actually he'd be a good
anything on any ticket.
So that really opens it up. But do you want to start that speculation? Whatever I say, I think you're going to start. You've just started it, so it's a moot point.
Okay.
I have a hard time seeing it though.
Yeah,
I really do.
Frankly,
if
he didn't like it the first time around, being in the same
fishbowl
under
Palin.
What do you make of all that? I mean, we were kind of making fun of the fact that we were getting some bottom feeders from the GOP nomination field last week, but now we got Romney coming. The RNC chairman's been here. There's an awful lot of activity.
Which Romney? Are we getting the governor of Massachusetts? Or are we getting the presidential candidate? It seems to me there's a big dichotomy between the two. Which one's coming? Do we know?
The presidential candidate.
Okay. Yeah. To the right of Attila Ron now.
We're gonna have the one that promised open change and all the things that he hasn't done, or the one we got now?
The one we've got now, which is your president who's brought that hope and change. And by the way, will be your president for the next 5 years.
Actually, coming to the Midwest, it might be a different one. It may be the son of the Michigan governor.
Governor.
So you have a different one.
Right. Jobs will be one of the biggest issues in the race for mayor of Indianapolis. Democrat Melina Kennedy tells voters that Indianapolis has lost 35,000 jobs in the last 4 years. That's why Republican incumbent Greg Ballard visited Indy's Kitchen this week. It's an incubator for food service companies that Ballard cited as an example of how he intends to create new jobs if he's given a second term. He has a 5-point plan for economic development that includes better use of the Indianapolis International Airport.
During my second administration, I will focus additional Develop Indy resources on airport redevelopment efforts to further capitalize on one of the city's great economic assets, its centralized geographic location.
Well, last month, the Bureau of Labor Statistics reported the most recent statistics and shows that we're falling behind. So Indianapolis is not where it needs to be. I know we can do better.
Andalini, can Melina Kennedy win the jobs debate with criticism alone?
No, and she doesn't intend to. But, I mean, the irony of this is that after 3 years, Greg Ballard comes out after either raising fees or taxes on small business 140 times during this three-year period, slowing down the process for approval of permits and everything else. He comes back in and says now he's going to get jobs created if he's here for a second term. She's going to have initiatives on her own that are going to show numbers much better than losing 35,000 on your watch.
So far, her campaign has been based not entirely, but substantially on criticism, and now she's coming out with negative ads in August.
Negative ads? Your she's idea got, of a negative today. Ad yeah, starts and today, mine are and not
she's
the
got
same.
Okay. She's attacking what the mayor has done on education in television ads.
Okay, and what has the mayor done on education? That's the point. Nothing.
This is unusual in August in a mayor's race, right?
Yes, it is. But on the jobs front, I mean, this is kind of pegs to the ceiling meter on her part. I mean, in 2010, Greg Ballard and the administration brought in 8,700 new jobs to Indianapolis. And that's more than in the whole 2002, 3, 4, and 5 that Melina Kennedy, when she was in charge of jobs in the ballot, or the Peterson administration, brought in collectively over the whole 4 years, 8,700 more in 1 year. Yes, it is.
Actually, what the Ballard campaign is talking about is job commitments and not jobs.
Well, that's right. Well, nobody has them overnight.
We've had that argument with your Department of Commerce, but you don't ever materialize.
You're right. We've seen more criticism than new idea or initiative at this point. In fact, when asked if she would these 140 taxes or rate increases or fee increases, well, she sets them up as sort of the bad boogeyman, right. And then somebody said, well, would you do away with them?
That would be me.
That would be you. And she said she's not prepared to do that.
She said, I'm going to do a top-to-bottom review.
And on the fee increases, the Democrat members of the council voted for him.
Yeah.
One was unanimous, another one had
It's going to be a rough race.
Well, it's shaping up that way. It's been pretty dormant until this point, so it's about time it heated up.
Finally, Danica Patrick is leaving IndyCar. The popular driver made the announcement in Phoenix this week.
I am excited to finally announce, we're excited to finally announce that GoDaddy will be taking me full-time into NASCAR next year. It'll be a full-time nationwide program with Junior Motorsports and the number 7 Chevrolet, and a partial schedule in Sprint Cup with Stewart Haas Racing.
Mike McDaniel, how big a blow is that to IndyCar?
Significant. I mean, she was so popular and brought a lot to the sport. But she'll drive in the 500, I'm convinced of that, and she'll be here for the Brickyard.
She hasn't foreclosed that.
So she'll be back here driving, but it's a blow for IndyCar, but good for NASCAR.
Will IndyCar survive it?
Yes.
Sure.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity. Just go to Hoosier TV and look for Indiana Week in Review under News. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in a thousand different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the thousand and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.